What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Well, we are at Fenway Park and creeping up there when it comes to a donation total, which is now over $2.8 million. And yesterday morning, we got that $1 million match from Rob Hale, one of the most generous people in the world. And that helped us get up to we're at $2.806 to $927 right now. You can give when you call 877-738-1234. You can also text to give any amount. Just text KCANCER to 56512. But with us right now, a guy who has been here before in a different role, Josh Kraft. And you were here on the telethon years ago, a couple of years ago, with the Patriots Charitable Foundation.
Yeah, exactly. 2 years ago, right here with the afternoon show, I believe, at that time. But look, how could I not be with turn down Greg Hill? I remember you from AAF. We got Snowball Wiggy over here. Courtney, Chris, my fellow alum. It's like a homecoming for me.
Is it awkward when Greg shows up at Thanksgiving and says he's the fifth Kraft son?
It's the sixth Kraft son.
I mean, I've been there since the beginning. Yeah. I mean, your dad said it, so I feel like, you know, I don't know if it comes with lifetime tickets or anything like that, but I'm in.
We're happy to have the Hill man down at Patriot Place. You've been with us since the beginning.
I've heard that clip many times.
It's his favorite.
Right. Exactly. We have to play it at least twice a week.
You know, my dad used to listen to you on AAF all the time.
Yes, he did. He was a big guy. I think he was a big Aussie fan.
Yeah, huge.
And
Megadeth.
and Megadeth. Before we get into your run for mayor, which I've declared you many times to be my mayor, you guys grew up here. You know this region. What happens with this Jimmy Fund radio telethon and the Jimmy Fund? It is unique, I think, to our area.
It's incredible. It's powerful. You all raise. I mean, what's the goal today? This week?
Well, I hope we get over four. I'd love to get six. We did just short of four last year, but in total, over the last 23 years, $74 million has been donated through this.
It's unbelievable, and the results are right in the room. When we came in, I was talking to a gentleman named Chuck who's volunteering. He was diagnosed with 4-stage renal cancer. He's given 4 or 5 years to live. He's now on year 10. He's volunteering here. That's the impact. Every dollar counts because every dollar goes to a guy like Chuck and changes his life and his family's life. And it's just off the charts. I know I was treated a couple times for prostate cancer, not as serious as that. And I can say when I went for my second round of treatment, the radiation, The young women in the radiation room were the best. I saw who came in before me. Kids, young parents with young kids. I'd come in the end of the day usually, and they'd be so upbeat. And I'd be upbeat, joking, and they'd say to me, "Oh, you're always upbeat." I said, "Well, how can I not be? Look what you deal with every day, and you're always upbeat, happy, and you're inspiring." And that's what every single dollar goes to, people like that. And helps people like Chuck.
Well, I'm a homer, but I always say that we live in the most generous region in the country, and you got to experience that when you ran the Charitable Foundation for the Patriots. And what do you think it is about here that makes people so generous?
I think because people are real. They're genuine and authentic. They'll argue. I'm sure you all do it every day. I know you do. I've heard of you before. Yeah. But in the end, when the right things need to be done, people will always come together. Yeah. And that's the power of community. Sorry, Courtney.
What is it about your family in particular, though? We just did a tour at Dana-Farber 2 weeks ago, and your parents' name is front and center on one of the donors' boards as one being one of the biggest donors. Your family's name is attached with every charitable organization in the state, in the region. Is that just your upbringing, that was instilled in all of you guys to give back to the community?
Yeah, you know, my late mother always used to say, and my dad, they used to tell us, you know, we grew up on the mean streets of Chestnut Hill. Everybody knows. But they used to say to us, your worst day is most people's best day. So you make sure people that are marginalized and overlooked are not only safe, but they have access to opportunity, because that's the only way you'll build equitable communities.
Wow, that's amazing right there.
Yeah.
Because I want to jump in real quick. Obviously, I know you through the relationship as a Boys and Girls Club. That's mm-hmm. where I grew up. That's what kept me on the straight and narrow.
The legendary Wally Bow, Dave
Wally
Ferraro.
Bow, yes. Yep. They kept me off the streets and kept me on the straight and narrow.
Great guys.
With you making this transition into becoming, hopefully, the new mayor, what's the focus, because we talk stories with some of these young teenagers and these young kids that just out there acting up, you know, getting into trouble, and I feel like they're missing the programs that we had as kids that can kind of get them in the right direction. So what's going to be your focus for those younger kids that, you know, come from environments where it's a little bit more edgier?
Yeah, so Jermaine, I spent 30 years with Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston, and then I spent 5 years still doing community work in Boston and Chelsea, and I worked a lot, and I've done a lot of work in the reentry field. A lot of folks that, and I always say, after the Boston Police, our number one tool to keep our streets safe is our reentry community, because they're committed and they're passionate about making a difference. And I think it's really using them and their knowledge to reach the kids that are struggling. And there's so many great programs across the city, smaller nonprofits. And we actually released a great, I'm biased, but a great reentry policy that we want to make Boston the number one reentry, the number one city for reentry in the country, because those men and women are such a great resource, exactly for what you're talking about.
Do you think it would help if we were able to get more bike lanes in the city?
I don't know. You're not riding a bike anymore?
Look at me.
I mean, he looks like Lance Armstrong, big brother.
But I mean, I know you. I'm sure you saw Saturday. There's 100 over 100 bikers, dirt bikers, running through the tunnels, and as mayor. Well, how do you because it's dangerous. It's dangerous for them. It's dangerous for people that are driving. It's disruptive. How do you stop something like that?
With the motorbike folks and the bike lanes. Yeah. And so this is going to be a bit of a long answer. But everywhere we've gone in the city, every single neighborhood, 22, 23 neighborhoods, regardless of socioeconomics, race, ethnicity, religion, language, we hear the same thing. People don't feel listened to, and people don't feel connected to the city like they were under Mayor Menino and Mayor Walsh and Mayor Flynn. And the bike lanes are a great example of that. There was no, and I'm not, everyone says I'm opposed to bike, I'm not opposed to bike lanes. I'm opposed to how they were installed. There was no traffic studies. Community feedback was ignored. And there was no study on the impact of small businesses.
That's the key thing.
Yeah.
These people can't park and go to these small businesses.
They're down 10 to 40% all in different neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And sorry to cut you off, Greg. But so let's take the time to do the studies to see community feedback, get community feedback, understand the impact on business, and then understand traffic flow, pedestrian flow, bike flow, and then figure out the best places to put
them. When it comes to business, what can a mayor do? What would you do to get people back in offices and help some of these small businesses? You know, restaurants, they can't count on lunch anymore. Like, and I'm sure you hear that when you're talking to your potential constituents.
Yeah, we have to reimagine downtown. We have to reimagine downtown. The post-COVID world, I don't have to tell you, you know what's happened and the impact, especially on small businesses downtown and the vacancy rate in buildings. We're going to lose as a city $1.7 billion of commercial tax revenue, the money for city services, over the next 5 years.
$1.7 billion.
Billion over the next 5 years. And the, you know, the current administration, and they should, focuses on the federal cuts to education and health care, which are brutal. But the real, another major issue, in some ways more impactful than that, is the commercial tax revenue we're losing. So we need to reimagine downtown. Our administration, day one, we're going to be open for business. We want to attract any and all businesses back to our downtown. You know, we have great schools here, great hospitals. We have to incentivize and encourage businesses from across the country that this is the place they need to be. And we'll create ways to invite them here and get them here, because we need to find that tax revenue.
Josh, so for me, recovery is a big, important issue. And I think Mayor Walsh was well-meaning in trying to figure out a way. Mayor Walsh also in sobriety. This has been something that he had spoken often about, mass and casts, the ways in which that we have treated and handled those that are suffering through addiction. I feel like under Mayor Wu, it's been a lot of just move them from place to place and not solve the problem. How would you go about attempting to try and finally fix a broken system for those that are suffering and in need of help and addiction?
Thanks, and congratulations on your sobriety. How many?
9 years.
Congratulations. So look.
It's hard for him working with this group.
Yeah, believe me. Yeah. Last week, Courtney had to, like, keep me away.
Well, the look, and we just did, there's a great group, women, it's called the HEAT Program. They work with all the women that are getting sex trafficked down there. So we did a walkthrough with them. I did, actually my older daughter who was in town came with us, and just on a anecdotal level, I drive by it every 3, 4, 5 times a day because our headquarters are right in Nubian Square. But it's just inhumane. It's horrible. Like, the women we were with gave some woman a popsicle. You would have thought she wrote her a check for $10 million. So, exactly. The problem, our focus for that, for mass and cast, the number one is recovery first, not housing first, recovery first. And we put together a group with some of the best recovery people in the city. I'm sure folks you know, John McGann being one of them, and law enforcement community leaders. And 3.5 years ago, a number of the businesses and community stakeholders came up with a concept of the Recover Boston campus, which is about $10 to $12 million a year to run. And that's what we've held on to. We want to reinstitute regular meetings with the state and community stakeholders and surrounding municipalities to make this a reality, hopefully in our first 6 months. Because the other thing, everybody's got to ante up money-wise for this, because it is not a Boston problem. It's a regional problem. The state, surrounding municipalities. And we think the Recover Boston campus, which will deal with addiction and mental illness, and then as folks move down their recovery path, start to add in basics of housing stability and workforce development. There's a program like it in Durham, North Carolina. And as I said, this program was adopted 3.5 years ago, or conceived 3.5 years ago, but was never taken up.
They'll be all over me saying I'm on the take if I don't give you any hardballs, if I only get
you softball. Can give me hardballs.
So first, what do you say to those who say you're running so that you can get a stadium for the Revs, for the family?
Yeah. Yeah, and I hear that frequently in specific neighborhoods. Let me tell you this. I've spent 35 years, Greg, and Jermaine knows, in the communities of Boston, Boys and Girls Club, substance use disorder work, reentry work. And in those 35 years, the greatest gift I got were all the people I've gotten to listen to and learn from. And the number one thing they've taught me is the power of community to come together and make change for the greater good. That's what's inspiring me to run for mayor. And look, anything to do the Everett Stadium, I will follow the guidelines of the state. Ethics Commission and recuse myself from all decisions. However, our Charlestown residents will always be the priority when we're talking, and I'll go at it with my dad and Jonathan. That's okay. It wouldn't be the first or the last time.
Yeah.
You
have brought up the wild amount of money that is being spent on the stadium. So go ahead.
White Stadium. Yeah. I was going to say the stadium I really want to talk about is White Stadium.
Yep.
You played over
there.
Played over there, right?
Played over there, ran track over there.
Right.
You ran track?
Yeah, I did.
When was that?
I think that was my junior. I actually threw the javelin, and the track coach was the Spanish teacher, so he said, "Hey, you wanna make your time in Spanish class a little bit easier?" And I regret it now because I wish I knew how to speak Spanish.
Right.
But
si se puede.
Yeah, all the track meets were at White Stadium.
There you go. And you know, Jermaine, I mean, White Stadium has needed an upgrade for 50 plus years. So here's the deal. We found out from someone at City Hall the current price tag, and we had proof of it, picture of a computer screen of $172 million.
So this is for to create this new stadium.
Create this stadium.
$175 million.
$172 is the last number we saw.
$172 million.
And so $172 million. BPS Kids will not have 100% access to it. In fact, football won't be able to play games till mid-November. What is that, one game a year? If that. In addition, generations of families that have lived around that park are going to have restricted access to it. And for $172 million, that's obscene. First, and I already told you about the $1.7 billion of commercial.
Yeah.
I know Lowell, Cauley Stadium in Lowell was rebuilt for $8 million. And then the Emerald Necklace Conservancy has a proposal.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
That goes from anywhere from $30 to $60 million, depending on the bells and whistles. And that is strictly for BPS kids and the generations of family that have used the park. So I know we'll split the difference. We'll say $25 million. And we've already talked about the great philanthropy in this city. I'm confident we could end up paying the city $10, $12 million, get another $12 million from philanthropy, and have a great stadium solely for the use of BPS kids and the generations of families that have used the park, like, you know, I think of Gene McGuire, who founded Mecco, a legend in that community.
The Globe, I think the latest Globe polling has you down by 30 points.
I think it's 28-3.
Yeah. Closer. But I'm going to just say this. If I paid attention to every poll, I wouldn't have gotten in. I wouldn't have become a politician 6 months ago if I paid attention to every poll. Although there was an Emerson poll shortly after we announced that had us down 14. So I'm going to tell you this, and I mentioned it earlier. Every single neighborhood we go into, whether it's me, folks I work with, folks, our volunteers, we are getting an unbelievable amount, an unbelievable response. Energetic, passionate, we want you. And we hear the same thing across the city. Again, socioeconomics don't matter, race doesn't matter, ethnicity, religion, none of that, language. People don't feel connected to the city or heard by the city. And that's been a hallmark of Boston mayoral government. Sorry, Courtney.
No, not at all. Just for my generation, I'm 33 years old. I'm married. But what I hear from all my friends is affordability in the city, whether it's trying to buy a house or renting. What can you do as mayor to help that? Because people are leaving the city because they just can't afford to live there anymore.
So thank you, Courtney. Our number one, besides the big picture issue of not being affordability, especially around housing, especially for working people. Working people cannot afford to live in the city. We know there's 26,000 units of permanent housing that cannot get built because it's just not cost effective. it's too expensive for developers to build it. Our first day, we're going to come in, we're going to jumpstart those projects, because with those 26,000 units comes $125 million plus of tax revenue. We're going to take a portion of that and create a first-time home buyer program that includes working people. Right now, working folks make too much to qualify for a program and not enough to buy a home. The median price of a home now is right around $1 million. So we're going to expand eligibility and include more people so they can qualify work to build the home. And then our second program is an opt-in rent control program where landlords, if they opt in and keep their rents at minimal increases over 10 years, they get a 20% tax rebate. So they get a tax rebate. Renters get affordable below market rents. It's not mandated by the legislature, which usually doesn't work and will never get approved. And it's opt-in. And we already know one landlord who has 600 units has run the numbers. They said they would opt into the program.
I have one idea.
Share that with your friends.
I will. I will. Of course.
Josh, brilliant Rivers idea. This one's totally on the house. So you know how we have street sweeping that goes up until, I think, November 1st every year. And then from November 1st to April 30th, there's no street sweeping. Why can't we close bike lanes in that same time frame? I.e., so it's you're not going to be biking in December.
Right.
And you would clear, so for snow removal, for whatever, you just close, use the same calendar as you use for street sweeping as you do for bike lanes.
Chris, it's a great idea. These guys are writing
thank
it down.
Don't tell him. Don't tell him. He'll be insufferable.
Curtis
don't tell him
now.
It's a great idea. Know,
next one's these, $20.
Some of these diehard bikers, you know, they'll tell you.
Oh, believe me, I hear from them.
So do I.
So do you. All right, if we endorse you and we get all of our listeners to vote for you, can you guarantee us a playoff appearance this upcoming season?
You know what? I'm going to guarantee a playoff experience. Regardless.
You're guaranteeing it regardless.
Yeah.
You feel that good about it.
Yeah, right. I feel good about
it. Yeah, feel good about
it. But I feel good about it every year. Yeah. So. But I feel really good about it this year.
Feel good about Mike Vrabel?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm no expert. I'm just a fan, but we all know enough. When you watch, you can see there's whatever it is there with the players.
No, I was just going to say, in closing real quick, because I know I saw you on social media talking to Smoke Bulger, and you bring up connectivity, right? And that's the one thing I feel like I don't get from Mayor Wu, is like you being from here and understanding what people need in the city, you know, what they need in those neighborhoods, you know, the fact that your headquarters is right in Nubian Square, right down there, Joe's Steakhouse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Joe's
Steak and Cheese.
Yeah.
And he's got great Trey Lefe cake, I always
do. But she knows what they need in Chicago.
Yeah.
That's where she's
well,
from.
Here's. But what advantage do you feel like you have that for the people that are going to now be voting or trying to figure out, do I vote for him?
All right. So, Jermaine, I'll give two answers. And one is I'm not here to, you know, criticize the other side. I will say one thing. When I started knocking on doors in the fall of 1990 in the D Street, Old Colony, and Old Harbor housing developments, getting kids who weren't going to school to go to school, she was in elementary school in Chicago. So they love to say I'm a carpet, whatever.
Carpetbagger.
Yeah. You know, for me, and this is when I said at the beginning, these 35 years of learning from people and about the power of community, my advantage, you just show up, man. Like a lot of people have said, well, you were in the community, but how come I never heard of you? I said, well, because I just showed up. It wasn't about me. It was about building community. And that's gotten out there a lot, which is great. And I think I know a lot of folks, quiet folks. I mean, we talk about a lot of folks we know in East Boston. It's just about using those connections, showing up to the people, having the ability to listen, understand, and validate whatever their concerns, their issues are. It doesn't mean you promise everything,
right.
But that's it. So having those gateways into so many of the neighborhoods is important.
Well, I appreciate you coming by, Josh Kraft. Great to see you.
Greg, thank you all for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
And everything, again, the family has done a lot when it comes to this event. We appreciate that.
Of course.
And your support of the Jimmy Fund, and good luck. And
thank you.
You're welcome on the show anytime you want.
I will be back, definitely.
We're still trying to get your opponent on. But you know,
I'll hold signs.
You're going to hold the sign.
Yeah, oh. This interview, I'll hold signs.
You're going to spell it right, or
they're already spelled by the time I get the sign.
Right.
I'll hold signs.
Great.
All right. Listen. Good luck. Right.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you. Right. Thank you guys for having me. Have a great day. Good luck with the fundraising.
Thank you.
All right. There you go. We're at Fenway Park. We'll be right back.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.